What's up, everyone? Welcome to a special roundtable conversation on The Amazing Spider-Man. Movie hits theaters on July 3rd. Very excited about it. Joining me to talk about Spider-Man, all things Spider-Man and more, Sean O'Connell. He's a writer and a critic for FandangoMovies.com, Cinema Blend, and more. What's up, Sean?
Hey, Eric. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too. John Golson is our other guest. He's a monster comic book geek and author of both the Marvel Countdown column and the Amazing Spider-Man Countdown column on Movies.com. What's up, John?
Hey, how's it going?
It is going. I saw The Amazing Spider-Man last night. I really liked it. Maybe my favorite Spider-Man film of the bunch. Before we get into a conversation about the film, let me just say that this conversation will include spoilers. So if that kind of thing bothers you, you haven't seen the film yet, then just go see the film and come back and listen afterwards. But, you know, in order to really talk about these films, we have to talk about them with spoilers included. So with that said, let's kind of start getting some general reactions. I'm going to go and start with you, John. You are the big comic book geek. You are the guy that's writing our Amazing Spider-Man Countdown column on movies.com. So what does the Spider-Man comic book guy like about the film, not like about the film? What do you think?
Well, the after covering it for like 6 or 7 months now, I'd been fine with it. My anticipation levels were good, and my heart didn't really start to sink until there was a screening in New York City a couple weeks before, where a lot of the word of that screening at the movie, and I think that news that buzz broke around the same time news were coming out that Mark Webb wasn't going to be asked back to do the second one. So when I went into Amazing Spider-Man, I was kind of really hoping that I wouldn't see a complete stinker. Nobody wants to cover a film as part of the countdown and then get to the actual release of the film and have the movie to suck, you know. But I liked it. It actually didn't change the – I felt like even though I liked it, I felt like the reactions were still similar here in Austin, similar to the New York screening reactions. So a lot of people were really really down on it. But I was surprised by it. I actually really enjoyed a lot of the human stuff, a lot of the more grounded real world stuff, the relationship stuff. I thought Martin Sheen as Uncle Ben was excellent. Like he's sort of the film's MVP in regards to bringing a lot of realism and warmth to Peter Parker's family life in a much more realistic way than was presented, I think, in the Sam Raimi films.
I agree. I completely agree. I think that I think he added a lot to it. Sean, you were at that New York screening, and I agree. I came out of my screening last night. There were three critics in front of me who were just kind of looking at each other like, you know, what was that? And it's completely unfair. And I was actually emailing with Sean last night because he was talking about really enjoying the film and walking into this brick wall of negativity when he came out of the New York screening. And I told him, I said, sometimes our colleagues just boggle my mind because this is a fun movie. It's really entertaining. I almost think it's the complete opposite of the Avengers. The Avengers gave us, you know, scenes that make you want to cheer, make you want to clap. I was clapping. I was hooting and hollering at the Avengers because there were some really fun scenes, but they had to sacrifice some of those character development, some of the investment that you have in those characters. Whereas the Amazing Spider-Man puts most of its energy into its characters and investing in them and their world, and maybe less into the stand up and cheer action sequences. They're still good in this film, but I think but you don't have that the kind of the same thing that you had at the Avengers. But it's great. Both films can certainly live side by side, but you kind of experience more. And I don't know. I liked having emotions watching a superhero film. I feel like so many of these films, they're kind of glossy and they're fun and you kind of turn your brain off and you have a good time and you say, oh, that's from the comics. And this film, I got a little choked up at times. Can I admit that? Is that okay, Sean?
Well, it's absolutely okay, because I would almost make an argument that this isn't as much of a Spider-Man movie as it's a Peter Parker movie. And that's why it works so well for me, because the moments that really connected for me, and I love this movie up and down. Eric, I'm on the bandwagon with you that I think it's the best Spider-Man movie we've seen. I've always had problems with the Raimi films. Little changes that he made to the mythology bothered me a lot. And even though Webb does tweak the origin in this to fit into a new sort of vision where, you know, there's this Oscorp corporation that's tying everybody together, from Peter's parents to Dr. Connors to Peter and Gwen themselves. I just thought by resetting it and taking it from a slightly different direction, they got off on a much stronger foot, to the point where I can't wait to see – I honestly can't wait to see where they go with part two. And if Mark Webb doesn't come back, I'll be pretty disappointed, because he was the right guy for it. But the scenes that resonated to me the most involve Peter. They involve that first – test of his powers in that warehouse, where he finally figures out he can swing on the chain, and the way that that's all put together, that's a magical, magical scene from any sort of superhero film. And then, of course, if we can get spoilery, the scenes at the end when he makes his promises to Captain Stacy and he has to alienate himself from Gwen, the way that all those pieces fell together to affect Peter, and for him to realize how much wearing this mask is going to change his life, and not always for the best. Those scenes resonated with me, because that, to me, that is Spider-Man. He has this great power, and then with it comes, obviously, this great responsibility, and it's not always the easy choice to make. And that's what I've always connected to the character with, and I thought Mark Webb absolutely nailed that.
He did nail it, you know, and it's – I mean, you talk about a film that wears its heart on its sleeve. This film wears its heart all over its clothing. I mean, there is just a tremendous amount of heart in it. The chemistry between Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone is fantastic. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that these two actually hooked up on this film. They're a real-life couple now. And one thing that I really liked about Mark Webb, the way he directed the scenes with the two of them, is that there are about three or four of those scenes that feel like they screwed up. It feels like they came into the scene laughing and they kind of messed up, but he lets the camera roll, and whereas another director would not use that take, he uses them. And they feel kind of weird and they feel emotionally off, and, you know, whereas maybe they shouldn't be laughing but they're nervous and they're giggly around each other. And I think that's because these two are really falling for each other in this film at the same time that they're falling for each other in the film in real life. And I mean, there aren't many times in film when you get to capture that on film. And it shouldn't have to matter in the grand scheme of things, but because it happened here, also I think Mr. and Mrs. Smith, when those two hooked up, there's great chemistry there, but you really feel that in this film. You really get that sense that they're feeling the same feelings that their characters are feeling for each other. I don't know, John, did you feel any of that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did, but I also thought that it was, I mean, at least for comic book fans, I think that's that whole, their whole relationship is undercut with a sense of tragedy in regards to, I mean, it's not really a spoiler to say that, you know, Gwen Stacy famously dies in the comics, and I think if they are going in that direction, it's going to be heartbreaking. I think that the character work that they're doing in this first film, and that they'll probably continue on to the second film, is, you know, if they create a trilogy that ends with the death of Gwen Stacy, I mean, they're going to make people cry. They really are. I think, you know, because they've created this, this relationship between the two of them that feels so real, you know, and you don't want to see anything bad happen to these characters. So I think knowing that that's Gwen Stacy's fate sort of underscores each one of their scenes, with sort of a sense of almost like impending doom. Maybe I'm bringing too much to it just as a comic fan, but there were a lot of scenes where I would watch them and just be like, man, they're going to break some hearts here in about two movies.
John, by all indications, don't you think that has to be the way they're going? I mean, they tease Norman Osborn. They set up this whole thing about, you know, Captain Stacy saying you're going to make enemies and the people you love are going to be in danger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are just big beacon lights at the fans saying, you know, Gwen Stacy's going to die.
Yeah, I do. I think You know, I don't know if they're going to do like an Empire Strikes Back thing and kind of kill her at the end of the second one and then have the third one sort of be Spider-Man's redemption, or if they're going to sort of end the trilogy with her death. I would imagine that if death is in the cards for her, that it would probably be in the second film with Spider-Man sort of redeeming himself and maybe even meeting Mary Jane in the third film. But yeah, definitely. I could see those things being set up for this.
Yeah, the writing is definitely on the wall
for this character's.
The writing is on the wall. I mean, one of my favorite scenes in this film, and I think it's one of my favorite scenes in all superhero films, is that first kiss on the balcony. You know, so many of these films, with the superheroes and the love interest that they have, whether or not the love interest knows or whether or not they don't know whether that they're this, you know, masked vigilante, and the ways in which the different films play with that and play with the reveals always intrigues me. And that scene, there's so much going on in that scene, and in that second when he shoots the web and brings her into him, and not only is he going for it, where he's built up the courage enough to kiss her, but at that same moment as he kisses her, he's telling her he's Spider-Man, and the look on her face as she goes in for that kiss, as she's realizing that he's Spider-Man at the same time as they're kind of expressing these feelings for each other. I mean, I don't think you can get a better moment in a superhero film. I mean, do you agree, Sean?
No, I totally agree. And that's why I even love the line in the school then where he's like, he's in the middle of fighting the lizard, but he still takes the time to turn to her. He's like, I'm going to throw you out the window right now. You know, it's just, because they have a relationship, even when he has the mask off, you know, those little moments mean so much more than just watching Spider-Man swing in and potentially rescue somebody. You know, I think a lot of people wanted this, or when they heard that the origin was going to be retold, they were like, oh, they want to do Batman Begins. And it's not Batman Begins. Watching it, I even got a chance to see it a second time. It feels so much more like Donner's Superman. It takes time to establish who Peter is long before he puts the costume on. I think we go a full hour before he even puts a costume on, you know. And so you talk about the reveal. I mean, I think about the Niagara Falls scenes for Superman 2, which to me was a great reveal. And we'd already had a relationship at that point between Superman and Lois. So that, you know, once their two worlds were put together, it meant more to us. And I thought that Amazing Spider-Man did a great job of weaving those two together to make them so important, which is what annoyed me a lot about Raimi's films, because not only did he cram Mary Jane into the seminal Gwen Stacy story, but I don't think they ever really had that kind of, you know, the characters didn't have that kind of connection the way that that they automatically do in this first film.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's funny that you mentioned Donner Superman films, because towards the end of Amazing Spider-Man, I was thinking the same exact thing. I was like, I don't know why, but when I think about this film, it just reminds me of the feelings that I had when I watched those original Superman films.
I totally agree.
You know, John, do you agree with any of that?
I'm going to feel like – it sounds like I'm lying for me to say I thought the same exact thing. there was a little bit into the origin stuff as far as like the way his origin was being revealed that I was like, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of Donner Superman. Now I just sound like I'm on the bandwagon. I'm like, yeah, me too, guys, me. But yeah, it was and part of it is it's got one foot in like this grand myth making and another foot in this very grounded real world. You know, Raimi's films feel for better or worse, they feel very comic booky. And I don't think Amazing Spider-Man, at least for the first hour, really has a more of a real world feel, which is what the Superman movies have. I mean, they definitely have the myth making superhero aspects, but they're set in our world. And Amazing Spider-Man to me felt like it was set in our world, not necessarily a comic book world. Now that also brings up to me some of the more negative aspects of the film, which is that when it does get comic booky, I think it doesn't succeed as well as when it stays more grounded. I think some of the stuff with the lizard, the second half of the movie, some of the action stuff, while it's all competent, I don't feel like it was handled with the same care or the same depth or the same energy or excitement as the relationship stuff and the real world, the human Peter Parker side of things.
Yeah, it does get a little bit repetitive because he keeps meeting the lizard. I mean, the stakes keep evolving and the scenes are different. I love the scene on the bridge. I love the scene when he goes after him in the tunnel and he starts setting up this little trap of webs. I really like that scene. I think that at the end, as these people are turning into lizards, as he releases these toxins into the air, I felt like at least I was expecting a money scene. I'm expecting Spider-Man to come onto the scene, and before he goes after the lizard, he's got to take out these people that are turning into lizards on the streets. I think Sony may have said, "Okay, we'll stop. We don't have the budget for that. We're not going there." I felt like that's the scene that people, especially after the Avengers, people are going to be expecting that kind of mayhem on the New York City streets scene.
Right.
You don't get that here.
And this does get into spoiler territory. When they ask the SWAT team guys, and the SWAT team guys all turn into lizards, and then the film diverges for like 15 or 20 minutes, and then they're injured. And it's like, why was that even in there?
Yeah, you know? It's you know, that I felt like that setup should have paid off with a scene of Spider-Man. Either if he's not fighting these guys, he's protecting citizens from these people that are turning into lizards, and trying to get that scene under control before he goes after the lizard. Maybe it was a hard thing to accomplish, to pull off, for budgetary reasons, for story reasons. I mean, Sean, did that, the second half of this film with the lizard and all of those battles and stuff, do you feel like it lost some of its steam?
I don't. I completely agree with what you guys are saying about the lizard cops. I thought we were going to get more from those guys. However, I'm going to, again, and I hate to keep referencing the Raimi trilogy, but I didn't think we got a great Spider-Man versus a villain fight in the Raimi trilogy until we got to the subway fight in part two. That was the first time we were able to see Spider-Man take off the gloves and fight. With the Goblin, it was that bad carnival scene where they meet for about 30 seconds and it's over. The burning apartment scene where, again, they meet for about 30 seconds and it's over. And then at the end of the first Spider-Man one, it's really Tobey Maguire, because again, the mask has to come off. But in this one, I will, as soon as I have this on DVD, I will go back and I will watch the fight in the school, which I thought was great. The two of them crawling across the ceiling in the school hallway was phenomenal. I thought the scene, you know, the fight at Oscorp is a good fight scene. You're getting great character work, which we talk about. But I think if you're just a fan of seeing Spider-Man in action, you're getting some really good scenes. Now, they're not Avengers level scenes. Obviously, Whedon, you know, had delivered something that's raised the bar. But I thought you got some really good shots of Spider-Man keeping his mask on, staying in costume and fighting, that I think fans will be able to go back and rewatch again and say, yeah, there's the hero that I really like a lot. And again, I want to talk a bit, if we could, about just how Andrew Garfield is so good in the role. And it's not just as good as he is as Peter Parker, but when he has to sort of – and again, we're talking spoilery, but he has to sort of rise up to get cover a lot of distance to get to Oscorp. And Mark Webb shoots this side shot of him running across the top of a building to make a big leap. And you look at his legs and he's just this tiny high school teenage kid, that the way that they frame it and the way that he looks in the costume, it screams vulnerable kid, you know, who here has to, again, put his life on the line, not only for the girl he loves, but for the city that he's kind of sworn to protect. Man, those scenes in that second half just really connected with me.
I also think that Webb really uses New York City as a character more so than Raimi ever did. Yes. I mean, it's the POV shots are really fun. That's something we've never seen in a Spider-Man film before. And they're used sparingly, but I think they're used enough where it's not a little bit too much. And just there's a lot of scenes of just him just kind of being – kind of swallowed up by the city and jumping off of roofs. And there's this great quote in Roger Ebert's review where he says, "This is the first Spider-Man who can leap off a skyscraper and make us wonder if he has a plan in mind." And there are a lot of those moments in it, you know, and it's
one of my favorite shots from the entire film might be it's set about sunset, or the sun is out and he's on the top of that skyscraper. And again, it shows you just how small he is. He has the backpack on. It's right before Aunt May calls him and tells him to get, you know, bring home eggs. But I thought the framing of that shot just showed, like, yes, he's a hero, but look at how small he is compared to this city that he's going to, you know, stand up and protect. And it, again, it's that realism that I thought this movie really nailed.
Yeah. John, what do you think about it?
Yeah, Garfield is really good. I think his performance brings an overall tone and energy to the film that automatically make it different from Raimi's. Even if they are on the surface, in quote unquote, the story. One of the questions that I've had in my mind going into Amazing Spider-Man is, how liquid is Spider-Man as a character? Someone like Batman, I think we've all seen by now that there can be many different interpretations of the Batman character that can still be entertaining. It can be completely camp. It can be a little more superheroic, like in the animated series, or it can be more real-world vigilante, like the Chris Nolan stuff. And I think we've seen that Batman is a very liquid character. And I've been kind of curious going into this how liquid I personally think Spider-Man is. And I am surprised that I do think that there's room for both Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker and Andrew Garfield's Peter Parker. And they're both right, and they're both different. I think Garfield's Peter Parker is more of a modern Peter Parker, maybe more of the way that he's maybe not quite portrayed in the comics now, because obviously now in the comics he's in his 20s and that sort of thing. But it felt more like a modern take, whereas I think maybe the Maguire take feels a little bit more like the old school Stanley Ditko, like the early stuff. I think one of the things the movie gets right that Raimi's films didn't capture is Parker's inherent scientific abilities, his own genius and things like that, which are, you know, It's made evident in the Raimi films that he's smart, but it's sort of like, well, he's smart because he's a nerd. You know, it's like Peter Parker's a nerd and all nerds are smart, so thus Peter Parker's smart, which is necessarily the way I think Peter Parker should be characterized. In this film, his one connection that he has to his father, who isn't around anymore, is that they both excel at science.
Yeah.
And he uses that connection with his father to find out more about his father and to try to dig up more on that relationship. But it also opens up these other doors where somebody recognizes his own smarts. Connors recognizes that Peter Parker's also as talented and adept at science as Richard Parker was, and kind of takes him under his wing. And it makes it that kind of groundwork makes it easy to believe that unlike Peter Parker, make his own costumes.
Yeah, I agree. I think
build his own web shooters.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's a nerd in this film. I think he's just a kid that doesn't believe in himself. And I think that's something that a lot of kids, when they see this film, will relate to, you know. And I look at this film, and yeah, I do feel like there is, if you look at, say, like Tim Burton's Batman film, and you know, and compare that kind of tone to Raimi's films, and then you kind of come into Nolan's Batman films and now this one, I do see the connection between Batman Begins. I think it's a completely – I think Batman Begins is a little bit of a dark, but in terms of, you know, kind of grounded in reality, I feel like The Amazing Spider-Man is maybe, you know, a little bit more pop-infused, a little bit more geared towards younger audience than maybe Batman Begins. But I definitely feel it in there. Sean, what do you think?
Well, I think if not for Robert Downey Jr., you know, setting the tone with the Iron Man, we'd be praising this Spider-Man for being the most charismatic hero we've seen in a long time, because they finally remember that Peter Parker is supposed to be sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
So he's funny. You know, there are some great lines in this that he gets off, both as Peter, you know, whether he's dealing with Flash or whether he's flirting with Gwen Stacy, or of course, when he's in costume. I mean, that's the Spider-Man that I connected with as a kid. I love the fact that he was this wise ass, you know, who always had, and maybe it was, you know, to mask his fear possibly, but Garfield is just so charismatic, and he's a natural charismatic guy, you know, off screen, the actor is, and they let him bring that to. Because a lot of times, even with Michael Keaton in Burton's Batman, you know, he had to be stoic, he had to be quiet. Of course, Christopher Nolan is doing something different with Christian Bale, too, where he's got the growly voice and everything, too. But then, of course, Robert Downey Jr. turned things around with Tony Stark. But I think we'd be praising Andrew Garfield more for that, too, if not for already, you know,
saying. And I, colleagues would also be, I'm not saying that anybody, you know, if they don't like a movie, they don't like it, it's fine. But I also feel like in any other summer, at any other time, this movie would be uniformly praised. I don't know if it's superhero fatigue. I don't know if it's people pre-production or pre-production, post-production buzz sort of kill their enjoyment or not. But I feel like in any other time, this movie would you'd hear a completely different buzz on this film than what you're hearing now.
Yeah, I agree. I think this film came in with a lot of baggage, and I almost feel like people condemned it before it even hit theaters. And, you know, it's hard to have this film sandwiched in between The Avengers and The Dark Knight Rises because people are automatically looking down on it because those two films are such monster powerhouses. But this film is a very successful film. I really think it's a successful film. I think if you're any kind of Spider-Man film, Spider-Man fan, if you're any kind of just fan of movies in general, superhero movies, you will have a good time with this movie. Just go and have fun with it. I think it's really character driven. It really makes you feel. I feel like there's some nods to 80s movies. I feel like there's nods to Karate Kid. I feel like there's nods to Footloose in there. I think Webb has a lot of fun with it. You know, some final thoughts from Sean. What do you think?
I adore this film. I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. This is the Spider-Man movie that I've been waiting for. And I kind of, you know what, part of me likes the fact that there are people who are down on it because it makes me want to champion it even stronger. I mean, I'm going to tell everybody that I can get my hands on that they have to go see it because it's really special. And I feel like it's going to get unfairly treated. And maybe people will recognize how great it is later. But I'd love for people to support it and get behind it because I think the team that put their heart and soul into it really, really got it right. It's fantastic.
I agree. John, final thoughts?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of reasons for this movie to not succeed. I mean, it seemed like a cash grab from the start. A lot of people loved the Raimi trilogy and felt like he was getting booted for no reason. And my thing is, like, whatever baggage Spider-Man arrives with, it's going to arrive with. I would only ask that the viewer not arrive with their own baggage. You know, and go in with an open mind and fair to be entertained. I mean, it's as good of a superhero summer movie as you'll see.
Yeah, I agree. Go in. Don't go in with your preconceived notions. Go in clean and just enjoy the hell out of it because it's a fun movie. Guys, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Hopefully we'll meet again soon.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Eric.
Take care.